good morning. Happy Tuesday to everybody. It's Totally Driven Tuesday morning. That's right. Totally Driven Radio Rocks. Bay Ragney here. And it's time for our Lizzie Borden special. So, I got a chance to interview Lizzie, actually, going into the weekend. So I hope everybody had a nice, happy, and safe Memorial Day weekend. And you're here to rock with us here on this Tuesday morning as we get back into the grind of normalcy. Or as normal as we can be, so to say. So I got to talk to Lizzie late last week and taped this interview. And Lizzie's been on my radar for many years. I've been a fan since probably like 85. Love You to Pieces when that album came out. Became a fan of Lizzie's. And we've been doing this show for almost 6 years now. And he's been on my radar to get on the show. And it finally happened due to the fact that he put out a new album. Or actually, I should say the album is coming out. My Midnight Thing. So he's doing promotionals, interviews, etc. for the new album. A couple singles are out from the new album. He's back on Metal Blade Records. So we talk all that. We talk the new album. We talk Metal Blade Records. We talk some old stuff. Talk, you know, naturally the Metal Years, the Murderous Metal Roadshow. What is going on with his band? Who's in his band? Does he even have a band right now? So we talk all that and much, much more. The state of music, etc. And we should just get right into it. You don't need to hear me babble anymore, do you? I mean, you're here to hear Lizzie. Or maybe you're here to hear me. I hope you're here to hear me as well. So let's do it. Here he is. Truly the one and only Mr. Lizzie Borden.
Hello?
Lizzie.
Yeah.
How are you, man?
I'm doing good. How you doing?
Good, dude. Like, most people, I'm sure, are asking you what's taking you so long for the new album, but I'm going to ask you, what's taking you so long to come on Totally Driven Radio? Because you've been on our bucket list a lot.
I have no idea. I've just been touring elsewhere other than North America for the last few years, so maybe that's the problem. But I'm here now.
Hey, that's all that matters. We finally got you on here. We got new music, and the world is just an exciting place now.
Yes, it is.
And you know what's going to make it even more exciting is actually my co-host Nick, who usually we're live every Thursday, and my co-host Nick is live with me every Thursday night. And usually when I do these taped interviews, he doesn't call in, and he literally had just posted 10 minutes ago on Facebook how when he was younger. He was given a box of cassettes from his uncle, and one of the cassettes was Lizzie Borden, and one of his first metal songs he heard was Lord of Flies. And I'm like, dude, 5 minutes, call in. So I want to introduce Nick to Lizzie Borden.
What's up? It was like the briefcase in Pulp Fiction. I opened it up, and it was just like, oh! And I listened to the song like 100 times, and it blew my mind because I had never heard music like that before. Before that, it was whatever my mom would give me. So it was like Clapton, the Jackson 5, Bon Jovi. You know what I mean? So I was just like blown away by it. And then when I saw that you were doing the interview, I was like, no, I got to call in.
That's cool. That's really cool. I mean, out of all songs, though, Den of Thieves, that's wild.
Oh man. So you had to be super excited, man. Like, it's been 11 years since you've put out new music. So, I mean, what's it like for you, especially like doing the whole crazy again, I'm sure. And it's like a whole new world for you again.
Yeah. I mean, that was the thing I missed being a recording artist. And that was the one thing that I was like, well, okay. You know, I've come to terms with it because, the collapse of the music industry just made it impossible to continue with the 80s record deals that we were trying to do, and they just didn't work anymore. So once Metal Blade kind of figured out how to adapt to this new world and figured out how to make it work, then Brian Slagle convinced me to start making records again, and I'm glad I did. I mean, it's exciting to get back to this side of things. I'm usually just touring and, you know, coming up with different shows and different things like that. But making an album is a whole different ball game. It's and then doing videos on top of it is pretty, right. It's a lot of fun, a lot of work, but I'm digging it.
Now, if Brian Slagle didn't come back into the picture and ask you to come back with Metal Blade, do you think you would have made new music eventually, like on your own, or released it like independently, or?
Probably not. I mean, I had resigned myself not to do it, and because I just thought that it was no point. I mean, the last two records that we put out were towards that whole collapse.
Right.
And they were just kind of thrown out there. Even Deal with the Devil, there was no videos, there was no nothing. And they were just kind of thrown out there, and it just seemed like the amount of work that goes into it to the amount of people that it actually gets to didn't make sense. So, yeah. I've already, over the years, I've had a lot of other record companies come at me and wanted to do something, but I turned them down for the same reason that that I've been saying. It's just, but Metal Blade is one of the exceptions because they are more successful now than they were in the 80s or 90s or whatever.
Right.
And quite a lot of their records, a lot of their bands are top 10 records every time they release an album. So they figured out how to do it. So that made sense to me, you know.
Sure. And I guess too, like, I mean, it's, you have such a long history with them. It's basically like a homecoming for you.
It is. And, there's a whole new crew there, from all the people that, there's a few people that have been there since my time, which was at the very beginning of Metal Blade. I think there's like three people left from that era, but there's a whole new crew there and they all work together and it's really cool. And another thing Metal Blade does is, which is unique, is they reach out to managers, producers, video directors. I mean, everybody. They're involved in all of it,
nice.
As opposed to the 80s where it was just they did their job and the manager did their job and the producer did their job. And, you know, but Metal Blade is all inclusive and they all work together. So that's another thing I really liked.
That's cool. Now, like during that 11-year time span, were you working or writing on any new music at all, or were you just kind of like, no, like, didn't even want to be bothered with it?
No, I was writing and doing demos. I mean, I still love to do that, and I've been, you know, I never stopped doing that. But it's a whole different ball game when you sign a contract and you got to deliver an album. You know, then the game changes from mindset of doing demos and the kind of scattered songs to actually putting a cohesive record together, you know, that everyone, at least at the label, is going to like, you know, to be able to put out. So that's a whole different mindset when that happens. So yeah.
Wow. Now, how about I mean, like, as a fellow musician, well, I'll use the term for myself very loosely as musician, but I know, like, playing in bands and stuff, like, when you work on new music and you put that new music together, like, the one thing was always, like, I want to play it live. I want to record it. I want other people to hear it. So you must have had, like, a huge frustration level from that point with working or writing new music and not being able to share it with people or the fans.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I had. Actually, I had that on the last two albums, you know, it wasn't reaching not only my fan base, but the potential of people who actually would like those songs. And that's what made me just think, you know, what's the point? So, you know, and it's still a frustration because even this album won't reach the potential of the people who might like this album. Just
sure.
Because of the nature of the marketing. The marketing is mostly social media, and social media it's an ocean of bands. And so it's very difficult to find that target audience, you know. But I don't know. I think the record's good. Everyone, I got my first 10 out of 10 in the history of my career on a review of the album. So I know... I made a good record, but you know, we'll see if it reaches the fan base. You know, I'm hoping that it will, but I don't know. This is new for me. It's been 11 years, so it's new to see. You know, you can't really find out until the album's released.
And you know what? I'm thinking to myself too. Like, all right, 11 years, and you're saying like how, you know, the music business, how it collapsed and stuff like that. And I'm thinking to myself, like, I wonder if in that 11 years, did you harbor resentment or anger towards the music business? And then thinking to myself, like, you would have put out, like, it's a real angry album. And it's not that at all. It's not, it's like a real, I don't want to say mellow, but it's like a lighter side of Lizzy almost.
Well, I mean, I've done stuff like, I mean, I did Master of Disguise, had a 40-piece orchestra and a horn section. So I've done different kinds of music through my career. But yeah, I was never angry at the music industry. I already knew it was going to collapse before it did because of the people who were running it. I mean, I knew most of those people, quite a lot of them. And a lot of them had no clue what they were doing, no clue at all, and didn't even listen to the bands they were signing.
Sure.
And didn't care, you know. So I was in that world, and I hung out with those people, and I'm just like, how the hell are you running this company? How are you doing this? You don't even know what you're doing. And you could say that about a lot of things. I equate it with the movie The Player in the movie industry. It was the same. It's the same thing in the music industry in the 80s. There was only a few really savvy people that were really good and that really understood how to do things. But for the most part, it was chaotic, and there was just so much money that it was able to sustain itself. But when that money collapsed and people stopped buying albums, that's when the true colors of the industry came, and then everyone jumped ship, you know.
Sure. Now, how about, like, I think I was reading, like, this new album, My Midnight Things, is about, it's like a love album.
Well, with each album, I pick a theme, and I kind of try to work with it within that theme, so all the songs are connected in some way. You know, with Deal with the Devil, I did about religion, and Appointment with Death was about death, and so on. All the albums had some theme that I was working under. But because the last album was about death, I really wanted to go the other direction. Even though it's been 11 years, for me, it's just a continuation of my career. So I wanted to pick a different subject that was completely opposite of death. So that's where I came up with love. And even though that's been done to death, you know, of course, you know, most songs are written about that, or at least most rock songs are written about that. But I knew that I could find other things. So that's what I did. I just dug down deep and tried to find something interesting that I could adapt to each one of these songs.
Nice. And did you, you actually ended up producing the album yourself?
Yeah, I produced the last one, and I've been involved in the production on every album, you know. I've been heavily involved in it. But, you know, as far as taking credit for production, yeah, I've done Joey and I did the last two, Joey Scott and I. So, but yeah, I mean, it was I got to the point where I was just like, when we decided, okay, I signed the new deal, now what do I do? And I thought about getting a producer, and I just said, I just do not want to work under a time clock. And it's so cookie cutter now, you know, it's like, okay, we've got 4 weeks. Let's bang this out, you know, and I didn't want to bang it out. You know, I wanted to make a record that I could stand behind and not go, oh, damn, I didn't get a chance to finish it, you know, which has happened on quite a lot of our records. You know, there was just no time, you know, so that's when I said, okay, well, I'm really not going to use a producer because I already know that I'm not going to like the end result just because of it's a time constraint. You know, and people are just trying to make money, you know.
Right. Now, were any of these songs, like, did you have any of this written going into it, or did you just start the whole process fresh, or?
I started fresh with most of the songs. There's a couple songs that I have, like, a junkyard folder full of demos and riffs and lyric ideas and bits and pieces, and it's just, you know, I call it the junkyard, and then anytime I need a part, I just go in there and grab a part. And so there's a couple of songs where I did that. I grabbed a chorus, or I grabbed a riff, or I grabbed something. But most of the stuff was written exclusively for this record.
Wow. Now, how about you already mentioned Joey, who's been with you through thick and thin, is on guitar and bass. Is it Ira and Martin, or?
No.
Oh, okay.
We the last time I played a show with them was in Russia. And that was the end of that lineup. So yeah, I'm gonna get a whole new lineup for the tour coming up. But
oh, wow.
Yeah, I've changed the lineup so many times that, yeah, I mean, even Ira, he came back just, he was already, I had Dario Lorena in the band, and then he ended up going with Black Label Society. So then Ira came in to finish off the tour. So, it was, you know, I switch up people all the time, so.
And that doesn't, I mean, I've been a fan for many years, and I've gone through with all the member changes. Like, it doesn't bother you at all?
Oh, no, I actually love it.
Really?
You kidding me? I mean, you know, when you find great people, the people that I've found over the years, to look back at my career and to not have played with them would have been tragic. And for me to have to stay with any one lineup would be tragic. Unless I just, you know, there's a couple of people that are amazing that I would still be playing with, if, you know, like Dario, I would still be playing with him if he wasn't in Black Label, just because he's so talented and he's a great guy. So you get those two and he's a great performer too. So you get that combination together, and then you got something. But even for this record, I need specific players, because this record has unique sensibilities about it. So I want to portray that. So you can't use, you can't just get musicians that play a different style and say, can you play this style? You know, it's just, it's easier to just get people who actually can play a certain style.
Yeah. It's been, it's gotta be like, amazing though. I would be like kind of frustrated like with the switching of players through the years, but it would be also kind of cool, like, and for growth too, you know, learning and picking things up from everybody that you haven't already picked up yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I look at making albums differently than I do touring. Making albums to me is if I have a band, touring band, and we're in this studio, I still approach it like they're studio musicians, because I still want what I want, and I want to get it that way. But as far as the live show, it's you can't control it that much. So everyone has their own performance style, and the lineups I've had, I mean, the Master of Disguise lineup, we toured for like 3 years, and it was the best time ever. You know, none of those guys played on the album, but it was amazing to be able to do that tour, you know.
Sure.
And then we did the 30th anniversary, and we had a great lineup there with Dario and AC and Martin and Joey. We did that for a couple of years, and that was amazing. So, you know, you have these certain lineups that, on a tour, and if you have the right guys, it's amazing. If you have the wrong guys, it's misery, you know. it's not fun at all. You know, you're trying to promote an album, you're trying to promote the show, and if you have the wrong collection of guys, it's misery. So I tend not to want to be in a situation where it's misery. I want to have fun as much as possible.
So you'll be bringing the Murderous Metal Roadshow on back to the States, we're hoping, this year or 2019?
Well, I haven't done the Murderous Metal Roadshow since 1985, so I doubt that I'm going to do that again. But I'm going to bring the Midnight Things show hopefully all around the world. I mean, that's really, we've been touring all these years to open different territories all over the world. Like I said, we played Russia, we played South Korea, and all over South America, and all over Europe. So it's going to be a world tour, I believe, because of just the amount of territories that we've been playing throughout all these years. So I can't wait.
Yeah, like I'm dating myself with the Murderous Metal Roadshow, and I, you know, it's funny because that was such a huge part of my high school life. Me and my friends watching that constantly on VHS. So those were the good days.
It's funny. That was our first tour, and it was just one lap around the States, from LA all the way around to New York and then all the way back. And the last night of the tour, we recorded that video, and then I dismantled that show. We never did it again. But to some people, you know, who bought that, who got that around that era, you know, it's everything. But we've never played that show since that night, you know, and that was a quick tour too. So it only lasted, I think, 3 weeks or something like that.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, so it was a flat of flicker in my career, but to other people, it's really a big, huge part of the recognition of Lizzie Borden.
That's wild. So it was, wow, only 2-3 weeks. And I mean, yeah, like it's really taken a toll, like on a person like myself, like, I mean, 30 something years later, like vivid memories of sitting in my friend's living room, watching it constantly on repeat.
Yeah. It's the same thing with the Decline movie. You know, we go to Europe, we play in front of kids, and they look at that, they revere that movie, and they look at it in a, you know, like it's as if it was filmed last week. You know, it's not a nostalgia thing to them. It's more of a guide, you know?
Right.
So it's so different. Like I said, it's a blink of an eye for me, because it, you know, even making that movie lasted about all the stuff that I did for that movie and beyond the first night that we filmed it was maybe a week, you know, week out of my life. But to other people, you know, it's a big part of their lives, their life. So it's so wild how these things take on this life of their own, and they keep going. And it's pretty cool.
Yeah. It's funny too, because like, you know, growing up in the 80s, you know, having the vinyl collection that I collected through that time. And then, probably like 15 years ago, you know, when the music business collapsed and all, and, you know, vinyl was so dead and everything, I was like, you know, I'm going to start parting out my vinyl, because it was just collecting dust in the basement, packed away. And like, I sold so much of it, but I kept naturally the Kiss stuff and the Motley stuff and the Ozzy stuff, and I kept the Lizzie Borden stuff though.
Nice.
which I actually got to meet you at Chiller a couple of years ago and had you sign I Give Him the Axe and Love You to Pieces albums.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. I remember that that weekend. That was cool.
Do you do much of the conventions like that often, or?
That was the first one I ever did. I haven't done one since.
Oh, wow.
But it was fun. I had a good time. That was a nice little weekend. And it got me kind of, it opened my eyes to what a lot of people do. You know, a lot of entertainers do. They do those things all the time.
Oh, yeah.
So I had never really seen anything like that before. And so it was pretty unique weekend. So, you know, I wouldn't be opposed to doing it again for sure. It was a lot of fun, and I met a lot of great people.
That's awesome. Now, how about I guess in the 90s, like when people like Rob Zombie or Marilyn Manson started coming up, like the next generation, like the shock rockers, did you guys like ever cross paths? Did you know what I mean? Like ever share war stories or notes or anything? Or
no, I've never met either of those two guys. I know a lot of people who know them, but no, I never met either of those guys.
And how about the new real big theatrical thing is Ghost. Have you seen them or thoughts on them? Or
I've actually seen them a couple of times, and I love them. I mean, I'm a huge, huge, huge fan of Blue Oyster Cult. I almost listen to them daily, like a crazy person. But and I can see they're so influenced by Blue Oyster Cult. I mean, it's embedded in their music. Much like a lot of my influences are embedded in my music. And so I'm, you know, so anytime I usually gravitate toward bands who are influenced by some of the bands that I'm influenced by. And most of all, 99.9% of all my influence came from the 70s. So, you know, when I see that, you know, I love it. And I'm a big fan.
Yeah. I just love how they do with all the little video stories and stuff like that to really build the hype around the whole thing. It just makes it so much exciting.
Paying attention to the visuals as well as the music. And that's something you don't get. Right now we're in a pattern where you're getting a lot of headliners and They've got the big lights, they've got the banners, they've got all the big show, but they're not performers. They're musicians, and there's nothing wrong with that. That's awesome. Makes the world go round. But there's not that many performers left on the planet. And definitely ghosts are paying attention to that side of things as well as the music. And so, you know, when one pops up, I usually like it, you know. But because, you know, I mean, like I said, most of these headliners are just musicians. And that, I'm not saying just, I'm saying that they don't pay attention to the performance side of things. And they don't care. You know, banging their head is more than enough, you know. And that's fine. And that's awesome. But I love it when bands go that extra mile.
Yeah, you know, I think that's like a huge point too, that like it just popped in my head as you were saying that, like, you know, as because now I have kids, I have two daughters, 20 and 14. So a lot of times I'm like trying to teach them the way of music, and I'm bringing them to concerts and all. And when we leave, like, they're not really impressed by too much, but the ones that they're really impressed with, and they like ask when they're coming back, and they're really into the music and everything, is Ghost and Alice Cooper.
That's kind of what happened to me. I mean, the first concert I ever went to was Kiss Alive. And I think the second, you know, I was blown away. I was hypnotized. I was like, I found what I want to do. It was it. I mean, it was just made, it was all made sense during that 90-minute show. I was just like blown away by it.
Sure.
You know, because it was my first concert, and they put so much into it, and there was so much energy, and the crowd was such a big part of it. And so I was like blown away. And then I think the next band I saw was Bad Company, and I was like, hey, what's going on? Where's the show? And I quickly learned, okay, there's musicians and then there's performers. And it was an eye opening thing for me. I think it was in like 13, but I was just, you know, blown away by the whole thing. So, but yeah, I mean, the ones who do put on the show and it accents the music, I mean, that's why Taylor Swift is playing stadiums. You know, she's putting all of that stuff in there. Whether you like pop music or not, it's still the reason why she's filling stadiums in North America, which is very, you know, there's not a zillion bands doing that right now.
Yeah. Now how about, like, for you personally, like, is it hard to keep, I don't want to say be shocking, but that performance level, like, because I know you like Kiss did, you change it each tour. So is it hard to keep coming up with new original things to do differently?
Well, anytime I get stuck, I usually work with some special effects people, and I, you know, kind of tell them what I want to do, and then they go, okay, I think I know what you need to get there, you know. So there's been a couple times where I was like, I didn't want it to be so hokey because I didn't have an idea on how to get my ideas out. So then I ended up turning to these people, and they know how to make it happen. So, and I'll do it for this album or for this tour too, you know, because this tour, I really want it to be visually striking. And one of the big things that are, that is different than it was when we were doing it is lights. Lights have become such a big part of a stage show, and it's going to be a big part of my show too. So it's one thing that, you know, we usually just depended on the lights that were in the venue. But now it's like the amount of lights you need to carry is a whole different ball game. So, but yeah, as far as the theatrics and the visuals, I usually know what I'm going to do and how to do it. But anytime I get to the point where I want to do something that's beyond my creative style on how to figure out how to do it, then I reach out to these couple of special effects people that I know that are amazing, and they say, oh, you want that? Okay, I can figure that out, you know. So that's kind of, anytime I get stuck, that's what I look to.
Cool. So the big release date is June 15th. You're doing a big record release party June 14th at the Hard Rock Live in Vegas, and our good friend Mr. Jim Florentine is hosting for you.
Yeah, it's going to be we haven't had a good release party in a long, I mean, I think since Master of Disguise, really. And I think we had that at the bottom of Capitol Records in the orchestra room, and it was amazing. So this is the first big one since then. So this is going to be wild. It's free to get in. We're opening it to the public. We were going to make it just a record thing, and then we decided, you know what? It's been so long. Let's just open it up to the public. So it's going to be fun, and Jim's going to be amazing. I already know that. So, it's going to be setting up this long time coming album, you know, because it'll come out the next day.
Nice. And actually, I have one of my listeners, Pete, asked. He wanted me to ask you a question. He said, "The Diamond Dogs. Will we ever hear any Diamond Dogs demos?"
You know, if we ever do a big box set, I'll throw all those demos in there. You know, just even though they were written by me, but I did it in more of a punk way because I just wanted to escape what was going on, and I couldn't. Right. During that time, it was such a weird time for rock and metal. So I just said, you know, let's do this glitter rock thing, you know, and that's what we did. And I wrote a ton of songs during that period because it was so fun and so easy to write.
Yeah.
So, if we do a big box set, we'll throw all that stuff in there. So that's when you'll hear probably a lot more songs than you. I mean, we did. There's so many demoed. You know, my garage is filled with tapes with demoed stuff that were done. So we'll do that at some point, I'm sure.
I think absolutely, because that's like the way now. Everybody's doing box sets, so I totally expect to hear Diamond Dogs in the future.
Yeah, that was actually a huge relief, a lot of fun compared to what we were doing. You know, we had ended the 80s, and usually it takes about 2 years for it to die out for any decade. So we toured until like 93, and then we saw the change in the wind and the grunge coming. And so I said, you know what, I'm not going to just put out a bunch of bad records just to try to compete. So I'm just going to have fun and do this project. And that's kind of the way I looked at Diamond Dogs.
Nice. Very, very cool. And where should we send everybody to buy the album, merchandise, vinyl? You got it all.
Yeah, there's packages, there's all sorts of things. It's metalblade.com/Lizzie Borden.
Nice.
And you can get all the packages that they have there with the t-shirts and the different colored vinyls and of course the CD and the whole package, all of that stuff. And then you can just get the CD there as well. The thing I always try to tell everybody is like, download it all you want, listen to it free all you want, but to support the band, at least put down the $10 and buy the album, you know,
yeah,
to keep this stuff going.
Absolutely. So, you know, it's funny because I was just saying to Nick before you had called in, I was having a conversation with one of the local drummers from one of the area bands yesterday, and we were talking about the world of Spotify, and I was like, you know, it's weird, like now. Like the music to buy like a CD or something like that. It's like not even about buying it to listen to it anymore, because you have like your options like Spotify or whatever, but it's about like just collecting the music now. Almost like a baseball card.
That, well that and supporting the bands, you know, I mean, that's a big thing. I mean, I know a lot of people who buy albums from different bands, and I'm one of them. And there's no reason to, because I can listen to it for free. But I do want to support the bands, and I want them to keep working, and I want them to keep making albums. You know, and if people decide, okay, I'm just going to listen for free, no one's going to make records anymore. I mean, right now, very few people make money off of the internet, off of Spotify or YouTube or iTunes or, you know, any streaming service. You know, the amount of money that it trickles down to, it wouldn't even get you a cab, you know. And the only people who actually – that translates into real money are people who are selling out stadiums. So
right.
So it's one of those things to support every band. You should buy their records. It's only $10, you know, whatever it is.
Absolutely. So, and any idea when the tour will be announced or –
Well, I decided, because it's been so long since I've had the album or an album out, that I'm someone who plays the album live. So I want people to get used to it, used to the songs and everything. I just thought if I was out there touring right now to support the album, you know, I'd be playing songs no one knows, you know.
Right.
So I decided, okay, I'm going to just wait. So, and plus I haven't even assembled my touring band yet. But I am working on the show, and I'm working on the production, and I'm working on all that stuff. So it's all coming together really, really good. So soon as after June 15th, I'll start working on all that. We just finished the video, and that got released. And the label already greenlit the next video.
Nice.
So we're going to shoot that, I don't know, within the next few weeks. And then, but yeah, then all my focus will go in on the tour.
Questions keep coming to my mind. On the album, too, because I've heard it, and I do truly love it. The piano version of My Midnight Things, do you see yourself possibly doing like a video with that, you behind the piano? I mean, it really...
What's that?
It really changes like the whole aspect of that song. I mean, it goes, you know, from the rock version to the piano version. It's like it really comes off as two completely different songs.
Yeah, I'm about 99.99% sure we will do a video for that for the reprise. I want to do a video for a few of them. Like I said, they've greenlit the next one, and then after that we'll see where we go. I definitely would love to do that. We could do it really in a cool way. We've already talked about it. So,
very cool.
Yeah, you know, we're just taking one step at a time and rebooting this whole. This is a whole reboot. So, I'm not anxious to just run out and go crazy. You know, I'm actually want to do everything meticulously and right. So there's plenty of time. So,
cool.
That's definitely one of the things on the list.
Cool, and I hope Philadelphia is on the list as well.
Philadelphia is home of one of our we did the Visualize tour, and we played a place called, I can't remember what it's called. But anyway, it was one of the best shows on the tour. I remember we played there since, but,
was it Pulsations?
Yes.
Cause that's,
yeah.
it's
I remember it was a spectacular show that we remember to this day, you know, on the Visualize tour. So, yeah, and like I said, we've played there since, but it's been a while. So for North America, it's been a while, and I feel bad about that. But it's a little difficult to play here and do it the right way because it's so big, you know. So you play a really good place in one state, and then you have to go three states across to play the next good place, you know. So
right.
It's a lot of territory to cover and a lot of people to pay to cover that area. So it becomes very expensive. In Europe, you can country hop and it's nothing, you know, it's, you know, but I, the 80s and early 90s, we spent almost entirely in North America,
but I
definitely neglected it for quite way too long. And I definitely want to fix that and bring the Midnight Things all around.
Well, kind of too. I mean, like, it's been a bad thing that we haven't been able to truly get to experience Lizzie Borden, but kind of like, you know, absence makes the heart grows fonder. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping. I mean, I'm planning on putting together a really, really good show, and I'm going to be playing most songs off Midnight Things, but I will play, you know, a lot of songs off of the back catalog as well. So I'm hoping to appease everybody. I mean, in Europe, we have a very young audience. But in North America, I really don't know what we have because we haven't toured here in so long. But, you know, I definitely want everyone to have a good time and see the show. So we'll see how it goes. And when I get everything booked, then excitement level will come probably more for me than even the fans, because like I said, we haven't played here in so long.
Yeah, I'm excited. Can't wait. Cool. Well, you know, I'm happy we finally got this hooked up and got to talk, and we got new music from you.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's great to be back. like I said, we've been touring, but this is a whole different ball game, even doing this press junket and everything. It's so different. And the reviews are now starting to come in, and they're all so positive. And everybody that I've done an interview with, loves the album, which, you know, that's never happened. With every Lizzie Borden record, it's always been mixed reviews. So this is uniting everyone in some way. I don't know if it's just because I haven't been around for so long or because I actually made a good record. So, but from what I think, from what I can see of the reviews, they really love the record. So, so I'm excited. It's such a positive thing happening right now. So I'm all excited by it.
Cool. That's awesome. Well, Lizzie, one last thing before I let you go, if I could just get you to cut an ID for me. This is Lizzie Borden, and you're listening to Totally Driven Radio.
Hello, all my midnight things out there. This is Lizzie Borden, and you're listening to Totally Driven Radio.
Awesome. Dude, thank you so much. And, yeah, I hope to see you at Philly, hopefully by the end of the year.
That sounds perfect.
Cool. Take care, man. Congrats on the new album, and we're going to keep pushing away for you.
Okay, thank you, man. Good talking to you.
You too. Take care.
All right, bye.
Bye. We'll be right back.
Bear Ragney here, and there you go, Lizzie Borden with his latest single and video off his new album that's called Long May They Haunt Us. And before that, we did the first single, and it's called My Midnight Things. There you go. That's the title track. New album, Metal Blade Records. The official release date is June 15th, so it'll be out in just over 2 weeks. So make sure you pick it up, get it. Physical copies. Get the physical copies. Or even if you don't do physical copies, or maybe you're just a Spotify person, at night before you go to bed, just put on Spotify and just put Lizzie Borden on and just let it play all night long as you sleep. You know, you can turn the volume down. Just let them get streams. It's a good idea, isn't it? There you go. So, yeah. So thanks again to Lizzie. Thanks to Metal Blade Records. And thanks to the whole PR team for hooking that up. Much appreciated. Glad we finally got to talk. Like I said, make sure you check out Lizzie Borden, My Midnight Things. It's on Metal Blade Records, so get it. You won't be sorry. It's a good album. I've been listening to it nonstop since I got my advanced copy for like a week and a half now. So trust me, you'll like it. So thanks again for tuning in. Make sure you like us, love us, follow us. We are all over the freaking place. Totally Driven Entertainment, Totally Driven Radio, where you're on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Or myself, Bay Ragney, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Or, you can also listen to us all over the place. Remember I mentioned Spotify? Yeah, we're there. We're on Spotify. We are on iTunes. We are on Google Play. We are on TuneIn. We are on Spreaker. We are on Podomatic. We are on Blog Talk Radio. And we are on Stitcher. We're freaking everywhere. So make sure you go to all those places, type in Totally Driven Radio, and subscribe. love us, follow us, like us, do what you got to do. Just get totally driven. Thanks again for tuning in, everybody. Make sure you check out Lizzie Borden. And next TDR Oxford interview will be coming up in, I'm not sure the exact date. Stay tuned to the following socials. And it's with Donnie Hillier from the band Trauma. And Donnie, good friend of the show, Trauma Bay Area metal legends. You might remember them. They were the band of the original bass player of Metallica, Mr. Cliff Burton. That's where Cliff got his start before joining Metallica. Well, they have a new album. It's out now, and it's freaking amazing. As the World's Dying. Check it out. So there you go. Stay tuned. Stay driven. See ya.